Well, good morning. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Children, Families, Finance, and Policy Committee. So good to have us all together. I'm going to start by having the clerk take the roll as usual, if Mr. Rohrer is able to do that. Not sure if you're set up for that quite yet. Thank you, Mr. Rohrer.
Chair Pinto?
Present.
Vice Chair Keeler?
She is excused.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Burkle?
Present.
Representative Coulter?
Present.
Representative Davis?
Present.
Representative Hansen? Representative Hemmingson Yeager?
Present.
Representative Hicks?
Present.
Representative Hudson?
Present.
Representative Katiza Watoon?
Present.
Representative Lee?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Representative Perez Vega?
She is excused.
Representative Zalesnikar?
Present.
And we have a quorum. Thank you, Mr. Rohrer. We've got our first item of business is approval of some minutes. You've got the one from February 29th, the one from just our own committee on February 29th. May I have a motion from someone to approve the minutes of February 29th?
So motion.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hicks. Any additions or corrections to those minutes? And again, those are just the ones for our committee on February 29th. Hearing none, all in favor of approval of February 29th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes. And we also have the minutes of our joint meeting with the Public Safety Committee, also on February 29th. May I have a motion to approve the joint minutes on February 29th?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Any additions or corrections to those minutes, members? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the joint minutes from February 29th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So those items of business are done. Excellent. Members, we're going to be getting to one non-child protection bill, which I'll mention in a second, but the rest of the bills today relate to the topic of child protection, and I know we'll have a couple of other hearing dates related to that issue this year, and this is a very important topic. We had a brief reference to it, I know, at a past recent hearing as well, and so we're going to start the process of looking at it from a number of angles, and I'll point out that there'll be a number of other bills coming, and we'll talk about that as we go. But let's get going then with Representative Hicks heading up front. Thank you for House File 1661. And this bill, I believe, is being laid over. It does have a cost, and we do not yet have targets, et cetera. So Representative Hicks moves House File 1661 to bring that before the committee.
I do have a DE author's amendment.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hicks. And so, Representative Hicks, are you moving the DE2?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, so members, this is just a full substitution as a delete all. If there's any questions for Representative Hicks, otherwise I'm figuring we'll let her swap out and then she can tell us about her bill. So all in favor of approval of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So the bill is amended. Representative Hicks, House File 1661 is amended as before us. Please present your bill.
Thank you. I will be quick today because I know we have a packed agenda.
Actually, Representative Hicks, I'm just going to pause. Oh, sorry, just to note that, and also we heard 1661 in a little bit different form last year, which is another reason we're going to be a little bit quicker.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, Molly. It reflects the priorities developed by the Kinship Working Group with participation from advocates, community-based providers, counties, and DHS. Kinship caregivers are vital and growing response within our child welfare system. We must invest in our kinship caregivers to improve outcomes for children and families. I won't go into all the details. You all heard all of my whys last year. But sections 1 through 3 establish funding to support relative kin caregivers and prevent engagement with the formal foster care system when appropriate. And section 4 invests in an established grant program to support formal kinship caregivers statewide. And I'm happy to turn over to my testifiers for more information.
That sounds good. And at some point, Representative Hicks, I want you just to describe what's in the DE2 as compared to the version we heard last year. But we can, and perhaps your testifier will be able to do that either way. But I'll kind of have either of you do that. And Ms. Woman, you can perhaps, if Representative Hicks wants to have you go, we'll just have you identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Joanna Woolman, and I'm the Executive Director of the Institute to Transform Child Protection at Mitchell-Hamlin School of Law. For my entire career, as a lawyer nearly 20 years, I've represented parents and relatives in child welfare cases in Minnesota. We also work on policy initiatives at our institute to help preserve family relationships for Minnesota's children. Much of the direct representation I have done in the last several years has been helping relatives and kin navigate the complex series of systems that confront them when they step up to help a child and their family. I have seen how challenging it can be to navigate both the formal and informal foster care systems that thousands of families travel through during any given year in Minnesota. For many individuals, trying to help a relative or a community friend in need by stepping up when they need support to raise their child can lead to a loss of their job, housing, access to the current benefits they have. And in some cases, this can also mean that a member of their household has to leave the home in order for them to get licensed for foster care. Many of these relatives and kin need lawyers to help them through the licensing process, which can take months, and in some cases to advocate for them during the child protection case as well. Some relatives need lawyers to help them establish temporary or permanent legal custody to keep a child in a stable place. There is no right to counsel for a grandmother seeking to care for her grandchild to keep them from entering foster care, and there are very few lawyers in our state with expertise in this area. We ask so much of individuals trying to help outside our formal systems, and they need financial support and expert advice to help navigate the complex array of services and legal issues that may arise when they try to step in. This bill is critical because it recognizes the work that these members of our community do. It provides them support during a challenging and scary time in their lives and the lives of the children they are trying to help. And we know from research that keeping children connected and maintaining a sense of relational permanence is critical to their long-term well-being and success. This bill will help Minnesota stay on a path of connection and safety for children. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Woolman, and thanks for your important work. Representative Hicks, I think that's your only, I'm sorry, no, there actually, no. There's two others, that's fires.
Yeah.
So, Ms. Kinsey, we'll have you come up and please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Karen Kingsley. I serve as the Senior Director of Youth and Family Services at Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. LSS is a nonprofit statewide provider of services to people with disabilities, older adults, and children, youth, and families. One of our programs is the Kinship Family Support Services, which provides education and support for kinship caregivers. I'm really excited to be here today to share our support for House File 1661, really because it invests in those kinship caregivers who play a critical role in promoting family preservation, reducing trauma related to out-of-home placement, and preventing children from entering the child protection system. A vast majority of kinship caregivers are caring for their kin informally, or more fittingly, in the invisible foster care system. According to Generations United, for every one child being raised by kin in foster care, 18 children are being raised by kin outside foster care. This informal kinship care is key to preventing children and families from entering the child welfare system. However, because there's less child welfare involvement, there's a number of barriers to accessing the resources provided to families within the formal system. Caregivers must navigate complex systems, as you've heard from the previous testifier, including the legal system, healthcare, public benefits, county administration, schools, and more. And accessing these supports is complicated and time-consuming. House File 1661 provides the resources to help connect caregivers with locally available resources, such as financial and legal assistance, housing, health services, food, and more, to ensure stability and better outcomes. We're strongly in support of House File 1661. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and work. And then the final testifier is making her way on up. And once you settle in, if you can identify yourself, please, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Susanna Barnes, and I'm the Executive Director with Evolve Family Services. Evolve has provided child-centered family services for over 46 years and is a leader in kinship foster care licensing. Since 2016, we have served over 650 children in relative placements. 78% of the youth that we are currently serving are children of color. This overrepresentation underscores an even greater importance in keeping children within their family systems and culture. While there has been a positive shift to kin care in recent years, our system is not set up equitably, with 87 different approaches and variable resources, leaving many families to navigate the system on their own. Some relatives are even actively dissuaded, being told that they have barriers, when these are often issues that can be overcome with support. Foster care licensing involves significant paperwork, background checks, trainings, home preparation, and an invasive assessment process. Community organizations like ours are actively doing the work to reduce barriers, providing kin opportunity to receive due consideration. We hold small caseloads to conduct thorough assessments for safety, provide personalized care, and assist families in obtaining needed resources. I'd like to draw your attention to two letters of support included in your packet today from kinship providers. Ms. Kenya Love tried for 3 years to gain custody of her grandson, initially working with a county before coming to Evolve, where she was finally unified with her grandson in January. These are her words. My experience working with a community-based provider has been incredibly impactful on my experience in providing care for my grandson. I have felt for the first time that I wasn't being seen as a criminal and was being seen as the preferred placement option and grandparent. I finally feel validated by being part of a community of other kinship caregivers who have similar experiences and who can be a support for me long term as I adopt my grandson. The level of support that I've received in such a short period of time, including hands-on support in transitioning my license, financial resources, and general validation of my experience, has been exceptional. We believe that all kin deserve access to this type of support, and current funding has not risen to meet high demand. Evolve has personally experienced an 85% increase and fully utilized our kinship grant budget with 5 months still left on this fiscal year.
And we will need to have you wrap up in just a second, please.
Yes. This bill will continue to build statewide capacity to support kin so that their focus can be on nurturing the children in their care. Thank you for your time.
And thank you. Thanks for your work. And I believe that's the last testifier who signed up in advance. I'll see if there's any member of the public who wishes to testify on the bill. Not seeing any. And so, Representative Hicks, if you and can you just walk us through the bill as compared to last year's bill, or you can have staff do that if you prefer.
No, I can do it. Okay. Basically, the goal is a simplification with removal of the evaluation based on less money being available, and really highlighting the informal versus formal conversation, making that really clear.
Okay. Good. Well, let's see what questions members have about the bill. And I'll maybe just ask the amounts that are in the bill, the $2.2 million and $3.9 million. Is there a reason you chose those exact amounts, Representative Hicks?
Yes. So they are based on the amount of children that we would hopefully be able to serve. So the $2.2 million in 2025 would fund 3 regions and support 155 families, 2 regions that would support 100 families, and 2 regions that would support 75 families. The $3.6 million in 2026 and $3.6 million in 2027 would allow for all 7 regions to be scaled up to support an average of 155 families.
And do we have that in a packet or anything? And if not, I might ask the advocates working with you, if whoever is, to provide that.
Sure.
To us in writing, that'd be really helpful.
Happy to do that.
Thank you so much. Okay, looking to seal, Representative Katisa Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hicks, for your continued commitment to improving the lives of children in Minnesota who are experiencing trauma and hardship in their biological families. I just have a quick question in terms of like the how the grants, not how they'll be used, but kind of how they would be divided, kind of following up to the chair's question about the fiscal amounts. So I'm seeing in section or subdivision 3, the allowable use of funds, but is there anything that supports the families? I know when people adopt or are fostering, there is the North Star assistance for children. So is there going to be any sort of ongoing assistance available for these kinship out of formal foster care families? How does that work?
Representative Hicks.
So I can ask the department to come down and explain a little bit more about formal, but North Star is available for guardianship transfers through the formal system. In the informal system, I think that looks a little bit differently. I know things have changed in that space. So I'll look for the department to come and explain ongoing support in informal. Previously, and maybe Jennifer will, Ms. Summerfield will correct me, but previously a lot of that support came through child-only INFIP in those situations. If something has changed, though, I'm sure Ms. Summerfield can fill me in.
Ms. Summerfield, please identify yourself and answer the question if you can.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jennifer Summerfield with the Department of Human Services. Informal kinship providers are not part of the formal child protection system, so they are not eligible for North Star kinship assistance.
This might be part of the reason for this funding, I would think. Representative Hicks will, yeah.
Yeah, so what children are, when we talk about child-only INFIP in this committee, a lot of times those are those children. So in a non-relative situation, child-only INFIP allows the kinship caregiver to access food support and minimal cash assistance through the INFIP program and medical assistance. But in many cases, that is the only support. And so it gets to be really difficult when we're asking a grandparent on a fixed income to raise their grandchild on one child's food support and minimal cash assistance through INFIP. That's a really hard ask.
Thank you, Ms. Summerfield. Representative Cadiz Batun, anything further?
I really appreciate that clarity. Thank you.
Thank you. Looking to see if there's anything else. I'll just, before I go, Representative Lee, I'm sorry.
No worries. Thank you, Chair. I just want to thank Rep. Hicks for bringing this bill before us. I am a census nerd and also have been kind of tracking this issue for a bit. So just want to flag that census recently released a report on kinship care and grandparents. And so just want to share with folks that we have seen a significant increase since 10 years ago. And so that was kind of the time frame. Happy to share the report, but do want to say this is really timely and really important. And grandparents who did not have grandchildren living with them were more likely to have a spouse or other partner living with them. So a lot of these families are actually also single grandparent households. And so just want to really emphasize the need. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Before I send things back to the bill author, I'll just say as chair that, to my mind, this kinship care feels like a really high priority in the child protection space because we know from research and common sense that a connection with the family is so important for kids, and if they can't be with their parents, with their biological parents, being with family, being with kin feels like a great way to make sure that they are safe and that they have those protective factors with family. So I'm particularly excited about this and appreciate your work, Representative Hicks. To you, to the last word, though.
Thank you so much. I think everyone said it beautifully. The only other piece I will say is that anybody who's been in the child welfare space knows that the formal system is traumatic. Period, full stop. It is traumatic. There is there's no way to put lipstick on that pig. When a family is struggling and family steps up and steps in and supports, it's still traumatic. But it's more child-centered and it's less traumatic. And so supporting folks as soon as they're able to step up is the best way to have child-centered, long-term outcomes that are hopefully the least traumatic.
Thank you again, Representative Hicks, for your work and all the testifiers for theirs as well. So the chair lays over House File 1661 as amended, but certainly expect to see it in some form as we move forward, assuming that they're able to. So then you have another bill, Representative Hicks, and you move House File 3781 to bring that before the committee. And so if you can please describe that bill to us.
Thank you so
and perhaps
much.
Sounds like there is an amendment, we think? Perhaps?
Yes.
Okay. I think the amendment is being, thank you. Amendment's being distributed to us and I believe is online as well. We'll verify that.
I'm so sorry for not having that in the packet. The amendment is just some minor tweaks and dates to help the department based on department TA.
Okay, and I do want to verify, so it looks like yesterday morning, but was this, I'll maybe check with Representative, it's being laid over regardless, but I also want to make sure to be respect our amendment deadline. Was this in time to verify? And it was, okay. And but it was not, but I'm sorry, but I think it was not distributed apparently. And so, Ali Daniels, I'll leave it to you as to whether you're okay. This seems minor enough. It's changing a date and the agency destination. But we definitely do not need to. If you're not comfortable with that, Lee Daniels, we can hold off on that. Again, this is being laid over regardless because I'm expecting a fiscal note. But either way, Lee Daniels, thoughts on that?
We can certainly accept it since that's going to be laid over. But there again, we're kind of breaking from our rules, 24 hours notice, so that we have time to look it over. I mean, this seems to be pretty vanilla here. Doesn't seem to be changing a lot.
And I'll point out, it's actually fully consistent with the rules in the sense that it didn't make the deadlines, therefore we wouldn't do it, except that the rules say that you can approve it. So if you're approving it, we're in the rules. If you're not, we're in the rules. Either way. And apologies, I gather we had it and just hadn't had it distributed. So it's certainly up to you either way, sir.
Oh, it's fine. Okay. I want to just not break too far away from the rules we have.
No.
We've already broken a lot of rules in this last year and this year already with not having fiscal notes for all the bills that are coming through committee. And we have a lot. So anyway, just if we could just pay a little more attention to some of the things that are maybe custom and usage. This is fine.
Okay. Yeah. And I don't necessarily agree with you on the fiscal note point, but I guess we can bring that up another time. But yeah, if you're okay with it, then that is how the rules are, how they work. And if you're okay, then we move forward with it. And it sounds like you are. So any discussion, members, regarding the A1 then? Not hearing any. All in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So the bill is amended. And Representative Hicks, please present your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair and members. This bill is coming from the need for us to really look at, should we do something different in Minnesota? So for a little bit of background, for those of you that are maybe not aware, in Minnesota, every county handles all of their own child welfare reports. So if you live in Hennepin County, you call one number. If you live in Olmsted County, you call number. If you live in St. Louis County, there's a different process. And the process varies 87 different ways. And that is difficult to identify sometimes what the appropriate process is. It also gets difficult if the person making the report lives in one county and the child lives in another county. It also is sometimes confusing for folks to figure out what makes sense. Additionally, when a report is made, each county decides whether the report will be investigated, sent to assessment, or screened out. The criteria for that looks different. And our local counties know their families. They understand a lot about local control. But as we have continued to grow as a state, the conversation has come, should we be looking at what other states are doing? Should we be looking at, is there a different way to do this? States have tried different things. Some states have gone back to other things. And this bill asks the new department to look at what we're currently doing, look at what other states are doing, look at evidence from those other processes, what other states have tried, and develop recommendations to either implement a common entry point or explain why that maybe doesn't make sense, including the benefits, the challenges, and potential cost. That report must be sent to us, but also published on the commissioner's website so that we can make informed decisions about what and if we should do anything different moving forward. So this doesn't do anything but ask us to really do some due diligence in the research in this space.
Thank you so much. And I'll maybe just a little bit of context for members. This proposal was heard, not with this exact bill language, but just as the idea in the at the Legislative Task Force on Child Protection meeting in early February. In part, I think members are aware, and members of the public as well, that we are one of the few states that has a county-run child welfare system. We heard at a previous task force meeting about the costs and benefits of switching to a state system as in other states. It's not so clear that doing that makes sense necessarily. Folks should watch that meeting to learn more. But this could potentially be at least a partial step in recognizing that regarding the maltreatment reporting, there may be a benefit in having that be something that is statewide. And am I saying all that correctly, Representative Hicks?
Okay. Yes, I think the other piece is that there are also a lot of states that are hybrid. So kind of a mixture of the two. And I said this in that larger committee meeting, so I'll say it again today. If there was a perfect system, we'd all 50 states would be doing it. It's because this is complicated and it's not easy. There isn't a perfect answer. There isn't a, this is the gold standard, this is the solution. Because if there was, all 50 states would already be doing that. But what we need to do in Minnesota is take a hard look at what are we doing, what's working, what's not working, and what's working and not working in other states so we can try to come up with the best system for Minnesota. And I don't think that I'm going in with an open mind, so I don't know what that's going to look like, but I don't think that it necessarily looks like what anybody else is doing. Minnesota is unique in how we operate, and that uniqueness has worked really well for a lot of folks. But it's not working for everybody. And so it's time to take a step. It's time to take a look and come back to the table about what we can do better and what we should do different.
Thank you so much. Let's see, first of all, if there's a member of the public who wishes to testify on this bill. Not seeing anyone. And then we'll move to member discussion and questions. Members, anybody have any? I'll maybe ask a couple of things, or just confirm. Mr. Berg, there's a fiscal note that was requested, and so it will be coming.
Mr. Chair, there is an active one, although I have to change the state.
I suppose.
Beforehand.
Fair enough.
There'll
okay.
be a new fiscal note.
Right okay. And then I might ask Ms. Sommerfeld to just comment about, is there any interaction between this and the SSIS IT system? That's the system that underlies child protection. Members, you'll see we're going to have a presentation on that on Thursday, but we'd just like to see, that is a system that is quite old and has some problems. Ms. Sommerfeld, you can just say sort of about, is there any interaction between that system and this proposal in terms of challenges, et cetera, Ms. Sommerfeld?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jennifer Sommerfeld with the Department of Human Services. So there would probably be some interaction. I think what would be a preferred outcome would be if there is a statewide reporting system, that it would be integrated into SSIS so that when workers are receiving notes and information from the statewide reporting service, it would be automatically included in a case file in that system rather than having to do some form of manual transfer. I'll just say I'm not an IT expert, so there may be other ways to accomplish that, but not in technology that we have right now and not in technology that would likely be supported by our current SSIS system.
You're saying, Ms. Sommerfeld, that if that was the proposal from the after this work, the current SSIS system would not be able to support that?
Correct.
You don't think? Okay. Okay, seeing if there's other questions or anything. Thank you so much, Ms. Sommerfeld. And then I think we're moving to final comments, Representative Hicks.
Well, to be clear, SIS is not working for anything, so we're going to throw that
okay.
in there.
That's a consistent theme.
Probably not together. Relevant to just this.
Okay.
Probably a larger conversation about DHS IT. But so this is really just what I believe to be step one in taking a hard look at what we maybe could and should consider. I have committed my brain to not having a preconceived idea going into this conversation, which is really hard for me. Because I don't think one person is going to know the perfect system. But I do think that research and reflection and lots of really, really smart people can come up with a better solution for the state of Minnesota. And I'm hopeful that this is step one in that conversation.
Thank you so much for your work. I'm excited about this as well. And I'm really glad to have started with these two bills for just some of the direction that they may show us to go. So with that, the chair lays over House File 3781 as amended. I'm actually going to go up next and deal with House File 4561. And so I'll do that and have Representative Katiza Watoon take over.
All All right, the next bill on our agenda is House File 4561. Chair Pinto, once you get settled in at the front, give us a little background.
Madam Chair, I'll be moving the House File 4561 to the Committee on Ways and Means, and happy to sort of explain all that to members and members of the public.
Great. Chair Pinto moves that House File 4561 will be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All right.
Proceed with your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. So, members, House File 4561 is the education forecast bill. So there's an identical bill being carried by Education Finance Chair Yu Akeem that is going to be heard in the Education Finance Committee on Wednesday. This, and I'm seeing we don't have Ms. Beckel here, but hopefully we'll be able to kind of get this figured out together. That this, the portion under discussion for our committee is starts on page 10 related to early childhood education. It really is just pages 10 and 11. And then to the extent that pre-K interacts with the other portions of the, with other aspects of the bill. And members, the main bill, the Yu Akeem bill is going to be sent to Ways and Means, but because these small portions relate to our committee, the idea is that our committee sends it on as well. And my understanding is that this does need to happen fairly quickly for districts to receive the support that they need to give our kids the support that they need as well. And so simply would ask for members' support regarding that.
All right. Mr. Chair, I don't believe that you have any testifiers.
No, I do not.
Is there anyone in the public who wishes to comment on this proposal today? Okay. We move to member discussion and questions. Lead Daniels.
Thank you, Chair. I see there's going to be a fairly large increase to the meals. Could you explain exactly what we're looking at for increased funding for free breakfast and lunches?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if Lee Daniels can point out where where he's referencing. I'm flipping through here.
Let's look section G, subdivision 3, is that what you're referring to? I think Chair Pinto mentioned that the section under our purview is section H, early childhood education, but Chair Pinto, I don't know if you have any detail on the school breakfast or lunch
program. Thank you, Chair, and I don't know. I mean, it's I don't specifically. And again, that really would be in the purview of the Education Finance Committee as opposed to ours.
Chair. All right, Lee Daniels.
Chair, I only bring it up as we are starting to see more addition to the finance, all the money that's been spent from last year. It's really not in our purview for early childhood, but we seem to have, you know, burnt up the $17.5 billion surplus and added $10 billion in new taxes, and now this program that's in the K-12 has going to be an overrun of, I thought it was about $150 million, something like that. So just a reminder that we need to be fiscally responsible and not spend every single, you know, dollar that we get. And just that's my only comment. I didn't want to make a big deal about it, but we're getting to where the forecasts are coming up as maybe possible deficit in 2026. So just a reminder that we need to kind of watch our pennies until we get through this next year or two.
Certainly appreciate that perspective. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. No, I understand that perspective as well, and I know that universal school meals will continue to be a topic of discussion, I know, and we'll probably save that for other forums, but appreciate Lee Daniels bringing that up. So, yeah.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair Pinto, for this. I'm so sorry. Representative Hunter, Hudson, you have a chocolate donut, which is my favorite. So now I got called on in the middle of chewing. So that's not humiliating on camera at all. I actually wanted to talk about kindergarten milk. So I actually have a bill about kindergarten milk. Okay. And so I wanted to take the opportunity to chat a little bit about some of the feedback that I received from my district around kindergarten milk. So I believe that access to milk in kindergarten, whether it be cow's milk or an alternative milk, is really important for growth and development and to keep our kiddos, our littlest learners, sort of full and engaging. And after last session, our school's student nutrition director reached out to me and explained that they are losing money on kindergarten milk because the reimbursement is less than what it's costing them to purchase the milk. And so part of you know, why I brought that bill was because I think we need to support our littlest learners, but we also need to support our dairy farmers. And we can't undercut our dairy farmers in our milk. And the way that we currently have kindergarten milk situated, it does that. It does not allow for school districts to even break even with kindergarten milk. And so this is my plea to please hear my kindergarten milk bill so we can get milk in the hands of our kindergartners without a cost to families and also support our wonderful dairy farmers in the state of Minnesota. So I don't know if you wanted to say anything about kindergarten milk, but I do see that that's listed here. And so this is my, and the money's going down, which makes me a little bit nervous for my kindergarten milk bill. So I just sort of wanted to put that plea out there and see if the author had anything to say about that or if that was something we could chat about.
Chair Pinto, any thoughts?
Thank you, Representative Hicks. And I don't know why the number went down, but I certainly wish you the luck in your bill, and I want to make sure our kids get fed, little kids too, so they can be doing all their learning. So I think Madam Chair, nothing further to add. And again, members, this is really catching up. There'll be a conversation on the education finance side on Wednesday, but I did want to make sure that at least the early childhood piece passed through our committee along the way here. So thank you.
Yeah, when my three-year-old started his full-day preschool program, when we came back into session, his teacher sent home a note on the first day of class asking me to remind him that there is not chocolate milk available at school. There's only white milk available at school, and apparently there were some tears. So, Representative Nelson.
So, well, I'll jump on the milk truck here, too. one of the things I'd met with, probably like most of you, I'd met with some of my district's superintendents and, you know, other staff at the school. And then also I've heard it from some just families, constituents as well. One of the problems with the school lunch, so there's a couple of the students bring their own and thinking that it was free lunch. They were getting, you know, they were getting a bill. And they're like, well, why are you doing that? And so apparently there's a bill for this too. So they were, you know, those that were taking milk during their lunch, when they were packing their lunch, they were getting a bill for that because it wasn't included in the free, it's a la carte. But they said there's a growing number of individuals that are taking the free lunch and then throwing everything away to keep the milk. And there's concern about, you know, waste with that. And it's, you know, the unintended consequences of you giving something away for free and then because somebody only wants one part of it. So, you know, as we do this and go through this, you know, I support having milk available. I think a very healthy, nutritious beverage, and I think it can start good habits in life. But at the same time, making sure that we don't end up throwing everything out just to get one portion of it covered. I think there's some adjustments that need to be made. And so thank you for hearing that to comment.
Thank you.
Even though it's not under our committee's jurisdiction.
Right. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I think, you know, hopefully we can all agree that it's important, no matter how they get fed, that kids do get fed. And the program is seeing tremendous success. Chair Pinto, we'll move to any closing thoughts.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. I just want to make sure and emphasize to members and members of the public as well that there's no fiscal impact here. The changes are built into the forecast estimate of the budget base. And so and want to make sure that we keep this moving, and so appreciate members' support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. Chair Pinto renews his motion that House File 4561 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The ayes have it, and you are on your way. Representative Hudson, you are next on the agenda as the chair takes back the gavel.
And Representative Hudson moves House File. Make sure I've got the number here, Representative Hudson. It is 1898 to bring that before the committee. And thank you. And so please proceed. Looks like you've got an amendment, Representative Hudson.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. The A3 amendment to House File 1898 largely makes technical corrections just to bring the bill up to date from when it was originally filed. But it also adds a member to the task force that we'll be discussing. And as we get into discussion of the bill itself, I will explain the rationale for the addition of that member.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. And so members, the A3 brings the bill in the form the author wishes. Are there any discussion or questions regarding the A3? And seeing none, all in favor of approval of the A3 amendment, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So the amendment passes. The bill is in the shape you wish. So Representative Hudson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing House File 1898. This is a bill that I think speaks to one of the burdens that we as representatives have, which is crafting public policy that services people in situations that we ourselves may not be able to relate to. I myself was not adopted. I myself have not engaged with foster care. And I believe that's probably true of the majority of members in this House. And yet we're tasked with crafting public policy that impacts the lives of people who do endure that situation. And so I think it's important that we're advised by folks with, as the majority likes to appeal to, lived experience, who've gone through the foster care system and adoption process, so that the laws that we craft and the policy that we formulate well serves the folks, especially the children who find themselves in foster care. And so that's what House File 1898 does, is it establishes a Family Foster Care and Adoption Legislative Task Force consisting of, as amended, 19 members to evaluate and make recommendations on improving foster care licensing and adoption and kinship placement processes, and ensuring that children with disabilities have necessary care in out-of-home placements. And I do not have any testifiers today. However, I did do my due diligence to reach out to as many stakeholders as possible regarding this proposed task force. And in that reaching out to stakeholders, the feedback that I got resulted in the A3 amendment, which we have now passed, which will add the a member appointed by the Office of Foster Youth Ombudsperson to the task force. And I think what's particularly noteworthy there is that foster care extends beyond minors, extends beyond children to the folks who've aged out. And with their retrospective experience, being able to look back upon what their upbringing was like and what their foster care experience, how it shaped their lives, that's an invaluable perspective that ought to inform our shaping of public policy going forward. And the Office of the Foster Youth Ombudsperson speaks to that, and that also informs the change in language in line 224, where we're substituting children in out-of-home placement with just the term foster care, to expand that beyond just minors to considering the entire scope of the foster experience beyond childhood. And so I limit a little bit the fact that Vice Chair Keeler isn't with us here today, because in looking at this bill and in engaging with stakeholders, I was reminded of the work that we did last year with the Indian Family Preservation Act, where, and I've told this story a number of times, I emailed her with a nerdy technical question, and it resulted in this flood of information that she was all too eager to share with me regarding all the background and details surrounding the Indian Family Preservation Act, which ultimately resulted in us passing that off the floor, I believe unanimously, if my memory serves. And now this year, I'm starting to engage with Representative Agbaje regarding the African American Family Preservation Act, which has different context in terms of potential issues in terms of getting it passed and avoiding some of the judicial difficulties that the that ICWA faced last year. But nevertheless, I think the end result that that bill is trying to affect is a worthy result, and that's keeping kids with their families, right? And I think that the foster care system, and again, this is resulting from the feedback that I received from reaching out to stakeholders regarding this task force, the best way to serve kids is to not have them in this situation to begin with, right? So to the extent that we can come alongside families and provide them with opportunities to be sustainable and to be able to take care of their own children, that's going to be the best result for kids. And I feel as though my hope is that with the additions and changes to this task force and as we move it forward, that the work that it does will help us move to a place where we are in a better position to keep kids with their families and, when we can't, to provide them with the most sustainable environment possible through their childhood and take them stably into adulthood. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Hudson. And first, let's see if there's any member of the public who wishes to testify on the bill. And not seeing any, and so we'll move to member discussion and questions. I'll have a couple, but one, let's see if anybody else has any. Not seeing any so far, so I'll go. Oh, Representative Davis, we'll go to you first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hudson, for bringing forth this bill. Honestly, I'm sitting here listening to Representative Hudson going, why hasn't this already been established in the state of Minnesota? I mean, our children are our most precious gift that we have. And definitely in regards to foster care, oh boy, extremely important. There's an ancient proverb, Representative Hudson, that says a nation falls for a lack of counsel, but in the multitude of counselors, there's safety. And this bill is obviously about the safety of children and future generations. And so I'm very supportive of this bill. And I think having a task force overseeing the foster care system is a great idea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davis. So I'll ask a couple things, Representative Hudson. You've called out in the first paragraph the broadly improving foster care licensing, adoption, or kinship placement processes, but then have a specifically regarding ensuring that kids with severe disabilities have necessary specialized care and out-of-home placements. Just wondering if there was a reason that you called out that second piece. I could imagine there being a number of aspects of the system that could use reform or examination, but it was notable to me that you called that out in particular, and just wonder if something was motivating that, if you understand my question.
I do, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you asking the question. That I think any time, speaking to the original premise that I offered, any time that you're dealing with circumstances that are unique and that are not broadly understood, it's easy to overlook the specialized needs that folks need. So when we're talking about severe disabilities and that require extraordinarily specialized care, again, blind spots in our legislative process and just in our thought process need to be illuminated by folks who have that specific experience with those situations. And so I think highlighting that, taking the time to ensure that this task force focuses in on those critically important yet not widely broadly understood circumstances is certainly worthwhile.
I could imagine, Representative Hudson, that there might be other, that's a particular population we need to be concerned about, kids with severe disabilities. In those situations, I suppose I could imagine there may be others as well. So maybe as we continue to examine this, might be something to consider, other members of the committee to consider as well, if that makes sense.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, this process, we're cooks in a kitchen, right? And so it's not done until it's done. And in that spirit, I'm very much open to any sort of suggestions to improve this going forward.
Good stuff. And I'll have a couple other things, but actually, before I get to you, Representative Hicks, I'll just ask this. You mentioned lived experience, Representative Hudson, and I noticed that the members of the task force, we've got parents and agencies, et cetera, not so much young people themselves, except for I know that your amendment added the one person appointed by the Office of Foster Youth Ombudsperson, so maybe that's intended to be. Just wondering whether that was, it's one person as opposed to others. I feel like some of the things we've seen passing through might have sort of multiple young people or youth or just or I suppose adults who were themselves in the foster care system. I'm wondering if you've considered that at all. And I'll go to you, Representative Hicks.
Mr. Chair.
Maybe I'm missing something too.
I'm sorry?
I said maybe I'm missing something. I'm actually seeing down at clause 10.2.24. Maybe that kind of gets at it.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm totally open to looking at how the membership is constituted to make it as representative and useful as possible. If we need more youth representation, I'm entirely open to that. I do think that the retrospective perspective of adults who went through foster care may cover that, simply because not only have they had the experience, but they also are now processing it with an adult's maturity and can provide us with the most comprehensive analysis of what that experience was like.
I do see that point. All right, thank you. So Representative Hicks, we'll go to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Representative Hudson, for bringing this. A couple of things. There is some data from the U that indicates, you know, more than two-thirds of children in foster care have disabilities, because that includes things like developmental disabilities, but it also includes things like mental health disabilities, learning disabilities. It's kind of an all-encompassing term. I just want to sort of remind the committee that there's no such thing as a severe or a non-severe disability. That's not language that we use. We talk about people in reference to their support needs, not in reference to severity, because that really isn't a quantitative thing, and disabilities affect different different life categories. And so, like, if you have a significant support need in activities of daily living around hygiene, that doesn't necessarily mean you have a significant support need in learning. Uh-huh. And so we try really hard not to use those kind of generic terms when we talk about people with disabilities, especially kids with disabilities, because when we use those kind of terms, we sort of set them up to believe they can or they can't. And so just sort of want to throw that out there, especially when we're talking about kids in the system. So just, sorry, putting that hat back on. I did just want to sort of ask the question around when you talk about the appointment of the disability community, there's two members, which is totally fine, being appointed. I'm wondering, do you, kind of based on your comments, I wasn't sure sort of what you were thinking in that space. Were you thinking mental health space? Were you thinking developmental disabilities? Were you thinking physical disabilities? What kind of space was your brain going to in that space? Because if there was a specific community you were thinking about, I would recommend calling that out, because the disability community is vast and big and the coalition is a lot of people. And so if you're only going to get two, you might want to think about who is your target. And there's some really good data that I'd be happy to share with you about kind of what disabilities are the most likely to end up in the child welfare system, and also which disability categories seem to be overrepresented. So if you want to have that conversation, we can totally.
Seems like a good collaboration. Good collaboration opportunity. Thank you, Representative Hicks. Anything you want to say about that, Representative Hudson?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hicks. You're taking me back to the first conversation you and I ever had in our orientation as new first-term members, where we talked about our shared experience with children who have disabilities. And you're right. Like, the language that we use and the language that has been used around children with disabilities is not always accurate or helpful. And so to the extent that you can help me, I know you have tremendous expertise in that area, to fine-tune this, I would more than welcome it. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Hudson, for bringing this forth. And while I did not experience, my lived experience is not foster care, I have, for the last 13 years, walked side by side with a family that is family to me. And I didn't plan on that, but it was a simple buy gifts through a Salvation Army for a military family. And it has lasted for 13 years. But when I have got to walk side by side, I have listened to stories of foster care for the adult parents. And I have also learned of so many scenarios where foster care could be needed. There are times when a parent's in the hospital, another parent's deployed. And I have visited the children in foster care and sat at the table to pray with them. And the thing I remembered is the kids running to me saying, "How did you find me? How did you find me?" And I said, "I will always find you." And so I think it's important that these children are and these families are supported. And having been on the EMS task force and the Aging Service Task Force that are critical, I would say that there's nothing more critical to the points made by the members than our children and creating that platform for them to have success and then to have people on this panel that have actually walked through the system to share their stories, because we are better when we listen to the stories and when we learn how to help people heal and move forward and to continue on a positive track. And so I'm excited to see where this task force could go for bridging this. And just listening to the earlier testimony on kinship, and there's clearly more grandparents and more extended people doing foster care outside of the normal platform we've had. And we have, I think, a responsibility to look at the fundamentals through something like this of a task force that's intentional, to look at how are we going to walk alongside the families and the children and offer the support and guidance. And so I appreciate the thoughtfulness. I think the state appreciates the thoughtfulness. People who have walked through foster care appreciate it. It's a very important safety net that we have in our state, and I look forward to seeing this walk its way through a formal process that we're here today to get something good for kids and families in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Representative Katusa.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I really appreciate the conversation on this today. I think it's an important topic. I also am really glad to hear that you've done some off-record conversations with different advocacy groups and stakeholders. Have you been able to connect yet with foster advocates?
Okay. Representative,
you're nodding.
Nodding yes?
Yes. Okay. To put it official as opposed to just nodding, yes, I have.
Okay. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They do such wonderful work, and I know have been tremendously helpful to me and Representative Hansen in bringing forward the Office of the Foster Youth Ombudsperson, and I think that their insight is really beneficial. So I'm so glad that you were able to connect with them.
Good stuff. Representative Hudson, something you want to say, follow up on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Katusa Watoon. Yes, indeed, I had a fantastic Zoom call with staff from Foster Advocates, which directly informed that amendment. I credit them with that premise that when we talk about foster care, you know, we tend to think of, when we talk about children generally, I think the picture that pops into our heads, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself, is the littles, right? Like we think of little cute kids bouncing around. But the fact of the matter is that the folks who perhaps have the most complicated and severe, with apologies to Representative Hicks, needs are older children, older minors, those who are close to aging out or who do in fact age out. And in other conversations that we've had in this committee surrounding homelessness, and other issues, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that there's a through line there of our failure to support kids in those situations early in life, translating to complicated problems that create public policy issues moving forward. So to the extent that we have that perspective of fosters who have aged out and can tell us retrospectively, here are the things that I experienced, here's what my process was like, here's how it could have been much, much better if you people had just changed this, that, or the other thing. That's exactly what we need, and that's what I hope comes out of this task force.
Okay, thank you. Other questions if folks have or points of discussion? I'll note, Representative Hudson, a couple things. One small point, line 3.10, if this does move forward, I would want to change the reference to jurisdiction over human services to jurisdiction over, you know, child welfare or child protection, just as we move into the DCYF mode. It may well be that you know, that there's a committee that's specific to that area, if that makes sense to you, and so we can just keep an eye on that. Let me pause for a second. Does that make sense to you, Representative Hudson, what I'm saying?
Mr. Chair, it does, and I would be very amiable to that correction.
Okay, good. So we'll keep an eye on it. I know there's conversation with Representative Hicks about the reference to kids with disabilities and possibly maybe beyond just even the representation on the task force, but also what kinds of issues folks on the task force are looking at, because it may not be just that particular group of kids, but there may be others as well. And then I'll just note more broadly, members, that coming out of the legislative task force on child protection, I anticipate, this may have already been introduced in the Senate, but a proposal to have a broader look at our child welfare system using expertise beyond just legislators, of which sort of this is in a way a smaller version of. And so as that advances, Representative Hudson, we'll have conversations about how this might connect to that work, and so sort of sort that through. So looking to see if there's anything else. If not, then Representative Hudson, you get final words on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that we fleshed it out pretty thoroughly, and so I will just ask for the committee support. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the work on this, and I'm so glad that we've had a chance to review it. So thank you with that. Representative Hudson has brought forward 1898 as amended before the committee, and the chair is now laying that over. Thank you so much. And then Representative Hassan, I believe, is in the room. Thank you for your patience with us. And I'm going to ask, I'll ask Representative Katiza Witun if you'll move House File 3689 to bring that before us.
Mr. Chair, I would move 3689, and we're just laying it over?
Yes, okay. So bringing that before,
to be before the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, yeah, because we do anticipate that there is a cost, and I guess we'll get into that. So Representative Hassan, welcome to the committee. Again, so glad to have you, and to your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to hear House File 3687, which is a simple, straightforward bill to help alleviate the burden of families and make the process easy to understand in out-of-home placement plan. As you guys know, last year in the summer, there was a OLA report that was released about children removals and reunifications. And sadly, that was not something that we really were happy about. We found out that this system is broken, that it's not serving children, that there was one too many fatalities, one child lost to abuse is one too many, in my opinion. It's important to note that the report highlighted, even though the state's policy priority is reunification whenever possible, many families struggle, and that even when reunifications occur, parents and children are separated for a long period of time. The OLA also concluded that the out-of-home placement plan is hard to understand. It's a 15 to 30 page document. If you're not a child protection worker, or if you're not from the legal world, it is not an easy document to comprehend. And we're talking about parents who are having the worst days of their lives because they're going through a system that's telling them, we're removing your child, or we remove your child already. And here is this 30 document page for you to read over and figure out how to get your child back. And imagine if you lost three children. That's 90 pages of paperwork that you have to sim through and figure out where it is that you need. Like, where is it that I need? Where's the list of things I need to do to figure out? While I understand that there are a lot of passionate social workers and county workers who will sit down with families and help them figure this out, many times that's not the case. We have families who are coming from dual language and English is not their first language. We have families with learning disabilities. We have families who are coming from a low-income background who, you know, they may have or may not have even finished high school. So understanding those documents is really complicated. And with the OLA recommendation, what House File 3689 does is it adds a requirement to the out-of-home placement plan. It says that before an out-of-home placement plan is signed by a parent or a guardian, the responsible social agents must provide the parent or guardians with one or two page summary of the plan. The summary must clearly list things that the parent needs to do to get their children back, and the summary needs to be in plain language. And DHS is required to develop a template that will be used by the local service agencies. With that, Mr. Chair, I will stand for questions.
Thank you so much, Representative Hassan. And I'll note to members of the committee that one of our earliest hearings last year was from the Office of Legislative Auditor presenting on the report that Representative Hassan is referencing. I think the only recommendation to the legislature from that report was to develop something like Representative Hassan is having in this bill. Unfortunately, that was never came into a bill last year, and so I'm really grateful to Representative Hassan for advancing this now. And this was, I believe, discussed at the Legislative Task Force meeting soon before our session started this year. So just kind of a little bit of context for folks. Let's see if there's any member of the public who wishes to testify on this proposal. Okay, good. Ms. Tyson, have you come on up? And as you do, I think, Representative Hassan, that we may have received information from DHS that a document like this has been created by DHS already, and the question is just getting it out to folks. So we'll sort of sort all that out. But Tyson, it's so nice to have you here. If you could please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Angie Teese, and I'm here today representing the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators. I want to thank Representative Hassan for bringing the bill. And while we agree with the bill's premise of making the out-of-home placement plan simpler to utilize and understand for parents and caregivers, we have concerns that without significant infrastructure improvements to both the out-of-home placement plan and the underlying technology infrastructure, known otherwise as SSIS, that these requirements will place additional administrative burden on county child welfare workers. This workforce is highly specialized and currently also experiences a high turnover. The out-of-home placement plan currently resides in the Social Service Information System, or SSIS. And as Chair Hassan mentioned, it is 30 pages per child experiencing out-of-home placement. The system routinely shuts down. It stalls or deletes the work. It may or may not be available during business hours due to bandwidth, and notably does not auto-populate or save the work, which results in many, many hours for our workforce. In conversations with our supervisors and managers, they estimate that this will add at a minimum of 2 to 3 hours per case. And reasons are that most of the time in an out-of-home placement case, you have two case plans or more due to the number of children, additional parents, or et cetera. SSIS does not always work in the office or in the field, so this would add additional pressure on workers. And workers are concerned that the administrative piece will get in the way of effective case planning and meaningful dialogue with the families that they serve. Again, while we support developing tools that support dialogue and understanding with caregivers of children in out-of-home placement, we estimate that this requirement, again, would add between 1 to 3 additional hours per case and significantly impact their ability to spend time in the field in meaningful engagement with parents and children. Again, we support the premise of this case plan summary and we look forward to working with Chair Hassan, this committee, and the agency to address the needs of developing tools that support the workforce and effectively engaging families when experiencing out-of-home placement.
Thank you, Ms. Deese. I might ask, this was a recommendation from the OLA report. I guess maybe counties don't typically. Do you all provide any feedback or input to the OLA in response to that report or this particular recommendation, if you understand my question?
Yeah, Chair Pinto and members of the committee, when we are asked to provide input by the Office of the Legislative Auditor, we do.
Okay. And is this a case where you were asked?
I do not recall specifically, Chair.
Okay. Okay, thank you. We'll just see if anybody else has questions for you as long as you're up there. I know we've got a list of folks to talk about the bill, but though I assume you'll be sticking around anyway, Ms. Deese, so if we need to call you back up, will you be around?
I will, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much, and thanks for your work. Thanks for your testimony. See if any other member of the public, I think we had anybody else. And then the order I've got so far is Representative Hicks, Katiza Watun, and Davis. So we'll go to Representative Hicks first.
Thank you so much, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill. One of the greatest joys of my life has been able to walk side by side with families as they navigate the system and get their kids back, which is awesome. But it's really confusing. They don't always understand what they have to do. They don't always understand the timelines. They don't always understand the pieces. And we have, in my community, amazing workers who spend a ton of time with folks and with foster parents to, you know, kind of get that clarification. But I think the idea that we would have something that just does that for everybody, so it's not based on who your worker is just wonderful. So I totally understand that the technology is a problem. It's weird. It comes up all the time. SISS comes up a lot.
It's almost like SSIS.
Is
it
the
really
problem.
Needs to be replaced. But anyway, okay.
There's a Taylor Swift song about that. And I think we should replace it with SISS is the problem. But I don't think that technology problem should stop us from trying to find solutions for families. So I thank you for bringing forth a possibility, and I hope that this committee can work with other folks to figure out how to get over that technology hump that is really just limiting us so much in this space. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to eventually want to have DHS provide some thoughts on the proposal as well for Chair Hassan. I'll keep on going through members, but if you get called on and you want to have DHS comment first, you know, I'll have that prerogative. Representative Katiza Watun, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hassan, I appreciate your professional expertise in, you know, working through this. I know outside the legislature you've worked with families and helped them navigate these processes. I just kind of want to share a really high level example from our personal experiences when we were applying to be foster parents. We literally received a checklist of the things that we needed to do to get our home study approved. And that's on the exact opposite scale, right? We're hoping, we're happy, we're excited to check off things on that list. And for families who are living the exact opposite and having children removed from their home, like you talked about, that burden, that emotional conflict, that all of those things that they're living through, to not have something so simple as a checklist, I have no idea how one would begin to navigate that, not even to mention the challenges of dual language families. So I think that this, it also seems to me that, you know, given the difficulties with the software, and hopefully, you know, we're able to mitigate that in other ways going forward. But if this were something that were a part of the process, that this would actually guide conversation with families. So as workers are walking through, instead of sitting down and walking through 30 pages, like, you know, when you sit down with like a mortgage advisor or something and they're like, oh, sign here, flip to page 17, sign here, feels like maybe there's not as much discussion as if you're just going down one or two sheets of paper and say, all right, do you understand this? Does this make sense? It feels like it would be much more concise and succinct and easy to understand. So I really appreciate you bringing this forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Davis is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing forth this bill. I guess, you know, I worked a dozen years at a drug and alcohol treatment program, and many times folks would lose their children to the foster care system, and they had to meet certain criteria to get them back. And a lot of times that part of that criteria was succeeding on an aftercare plan. And for half those years, I helped parents with their aftercare plan going through treatment. And sometimes that aftercare plan was could be a page or two of criteria that they would have to meet. And, you know, you testified a summary plan can be up to 30 pages. And I'm going, oh, my goodness, what in the world is in that summary plan? And so to me, that is ridiculous. But I see the bill here. It just says 1 to 2 page summary of the plan. I just want to make sure that we wouldn't be limiting what should be in the summary. Again, I've never seen a summary, so maybe you guys could help me out with that. But I guess my question is for Representative Hassan and Representative Hicks and Representative Cotiza Watun, if you folks have seen a summary plan, I just want to make sure we're not limiting with the 1 to 2 page criteria here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Chair, thank you for the question. Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Davis. We are not saying that don't use the 30 page. That's SSIS, that's county, that's government. Even if you apply for medical assistance, you have to fill out tons of pages, and I don't know why our system is set up that way. What we're saying is the requirement to get your child back, you're going to have an out-of-placement plan that is concise and that is however many pages long, but the parent have to do X, Y, and Z to get their child back. That's the what we're changing to say, like, give people a list of things that they need to do, so then they clearly don't have to sip through 30 pages or 90 pages if you lost three kids, of saying, like, I don't know, if I had 90 pages to sip through, I don't think I will remember even what the requirement of getting my children back was. So in this plan, it will say only focus on how to get your children back and what that plan is. Here are, you know, checklist of how many steps you need to take to get your child back. Does that make sense?
Kind of sounds representative, like sort of a one to two page, you know, just the absolute capsule, and then they still get, there's still other information that they get, correct, Representative Hassan? Yeah, so this is just, but kind of forcing everybody to have the most basic things on either side of one sheet of paper. Representative Davis, makes sense, moving on? Okay, so Representative Nelson, you're up next.
Thank you, Chair, and, you know, thank you for Representative Hassan for bringing this bill forward. You know, I'm looking over right now the, you know, the House research summary. You know, it's a paragraph, you know, telling us what it is, what the bill is about. Most of us, you know, will maybe we read it, maybe we don't, maybe we rely on our researcher to go through that for us. But, you know, when we look at this, you know, then we take and look into the bill and say, all right, what's the specifics of that? And that's where, you know, I really see the, you know, the value of this and having this summary. And I also empathize with our county staff. I mean, they're stressed. The system they are working with is broken. I've had a bill for a number of years. Representative Hansen, I almost called you Hassan, sorry. That's, you know, there was a study that you had a bill in for last year, and I believe that's been completed or close to it. Our system is not working right. The frustration when, if you talk to our staff back in our counties with the system, is, and unfortunately it's something that is needed, but the system has got to be updated. And I think DHS, I don't know, I think the direction from the legislature has kind of been there. And I think DHS has kind of ignored that being done, or maybe kind of is the wrong word. They just have not updated the system.
You talk about the IT system, the SSIS?
Just whether it's IT, the forms, I mean, I think everything about it has got to be updated. And you know, I would hope that, you know, maybe under the children and families, maybe moving it out of DHS, maybe there'll be an improvement there. I don't know what the answer is, but hearing from our counties, our Health and Human Services directors, our families, the system right now is very complicated. It's some of the IT stuff is antiquated. I know Pine County, they've got one of the forms they have to fill out is on an old green screen computer. Being able to have somebody that's around that knows how to work with that, it's incredibly frustrating to the staff. And then when it's asked of DHS, what is the reason for this? Well, we don't really look at the report. We just make sure you have it in before you. And it's disheartening to those that are doing this work. And this has got to get taken care of and moved, you know, beyond this, because our social workers and our families need this to be done. You know, we're talking about children here that it's in their best interest to be with their families. And, you know, for a family to have a checklist, to have a summary of what happens, what needs to happen to be able to get them back, it's very, you know, I think it's very important. They also need the full 30-page or however many page document to do so. But to make this more efficient, we have got to really start back at the beginning and fix the software, fix the system that is going on ahead of this. So, Representative Hassan, I know that got to be a long comment. Thank you for this. I think it's important to have the summary plan, but I think stepping back, there's a whole lot more that needs to be fixed along with this as well. So thank you for that.
Thank you, and I'm going to ask if it's okay with Chair Hassan. I think I'm going to call up Ms. Sommerfeld from DHS, since DHS was invoked, and I kind of want to ask a couple questions as well. As you come up, Representative Nelson and everybody else, again, we're going to have a presentation on Thursday about the SSIS system, this IT system. And I really urge folks, like, let's dive in, because it seems like it's not only coming up in these bills, but in some other child protection bills that I'm expecting us to see. It's extremely old. Anyway, we'll get into that on Thursday. We really want to encourage all of us to dive in. But Ms. Sommerfeld, if you could just please comment on, you'd provided some technical assistance. I think there wasn't time to incorporate an amendment at this point, but kind of what is the status of this? My understanding is DHS has in fact created a summary. If you can just sort of give the committee a sense of things.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jennifer Sommerfeld from the Department of Human Services. In response to the OLA report that requested that we put together a one-page template and a summary for the out-of-home placement plan, which, as was noted, is about a 30-page document, we did create a template, and we released that in November of 2023. But we have talked with our county partners on this quite a bit and know that this document will, once completed, likely be more than two pages because there's a lot of information in that plan. We have sent some information to Representative Hassan and hope to work on some technical assistance that will make sure that this bill can be implemented, and are committed to working with our county partners and tribal partners who use our system to make sure that documents in it will work. I will say that SSIS needs to be updated significantly to be able to do this work, as was talked about, and that is a huge undertaking that will require significant state investment in order to accomplish that. But we are committed to working this. We think it's incredibly important for families to have this accurate information, and our TA will hopefully make this more implementable.
And if SSIS is not updated, how would things work with regard to this? You've created this document, this, I guess, slightly over two-page document once it's filled in. What happens? How would this work then?
Right. Well, this would be an entirely manual document then that would have to be created by workers after the out-of-home placement plan is in place. And part of the technical assistance that we're working with Representative Hassan on is that the bill right now requires basically all of the information that's in, as drafted, that's in the out-of-home placement plan. So we are going to work on making sure that language summarizes that information and provides that condensed checklist, and then work to revise our form. We may not be able to keep it in SSIS. It may have to be a form that comes out of SSIS and would be manually run. But as our county partners have noted, that does add time to working on their cases. So we acknowledge that. So that's kind of where we're at on this, but we can find a way to make this work.
Thank you. As long as you're sitting up there, I don't know if there are, and certainly Chair Hassan, if anything that you want to say regarding that, or if there's folks have questions for Ms. Sommerfeld. And I know we've got at least one more member. So, okay. Well, so thank you, Ms. Sommerfeld. Appreciate it. Representative Lesnikar, we'll go to you. Obviously give Chair Hassan the last word. Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And thank you, Representative Hassan. I appreciate you bringing forth,
this bill. I understand the issues with the IT. I think we have a lot of deep diving to do at this committee to fix an age-old problem. Having worked with helping people apply for medical assistance in numerous forms my entire career, it is overwhelming. In healthcare, we do person-centered care. We do care plans in nursing homes. We do service agreements and assisted living models. And they're monumental documents also. So that exists in many of the formats we have. But to the points being made here, when you are the consumer, to not have a checklist, I don't care if it's a Word document, an Excel document, a document that gives people a clear statements, especially we've had 13 children or 15 children that, you know, died in that those cases, and it's horrifying. And so in those situations where there were, you know, there are numerous scenarios, whether they didn't attend treatment or they didn't get drugged, whatever it was, it could be very specific. I would see a checklist, and I, to the points made, I don't know what your the summary plan would need to be from in that 30-page document, but I'm sure it's things like physical environment and treatment plans and whatever it is, very specifically, succinctly stated, that need to happen for X to happen. And so while I understand the stress on the counties is very real, and we have an obligation to streamline that system, we also have an obligation to have a simple process for the people in our communities that need to understand what this is. And we have to look at the layers of mandates we put on our social workers, and the mandates continually are layered with no one evaluating why and are they accomplishing. Is anybody at DHS reading the report? Is it coming to the legislative body? Is it just a checklist in a report that is just laid on a shelf? And we need to ask those questions and have reports on that. But I support what you're asking for. I think it's common sense. We need to be reasonable for the consumer, and our goal is to be clear. And while it's clear to us what some of this language means, the acronyms that exist in every single division of every committee we are on are overwhelming to people, and I hear that all the time. And so I think we have to find a succinct way, and a one-page, two-page overview of it, I think, is common sense, and we need to work towards that. Thank you for bringing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. Chair Hassan, to you for the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I appreciate the comment from the county. I used to be a county worker. I have used SSIS, and it has crashed on me multiple times just without finishing one assignment. So I get that. I get the struggle of SSIS, but I also I'm a parent first. So if I was in that situation, I would want somebody to extend me the hand of, like, making this process easier for me. And we want to make sure that this process is easy and comprehensible, and at least the results are that families are reunited. And if we're going to do that, if our priority is reuniting children with their families, then we have to take every step possible to make that process easier. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Chair Hassan. Thanks for bringing your expertise to bear on this. Very much appreciated. And I guess I'll note that, again, we've got some technical assistance coming from DHS, and we're going to verify regarding the fiscal cost. But to make sure that parents have this kind of summary information, it was called for by our legislative auditor, and certainly makes a ton of sense. So I'm so grateful to you. And I just want to thank members of the committee for, I think, a really rich conversation all day across all these bills. This is just the beginning of looking at our child protection process. I want to encourage members again, a reminder, as I said on the first day, that your proposals, if you've got thoughts about improving the system, please bring them forward. Because there's a lot that we need to do. And I'm grateful for the expertise in the committee. I think five of the members of this committee, in fact, do have deep expertise with this system. So grateful for that. So thank you, Chair Hassan. With that, the chair lays over House File 3689 to bring up another time. Thank you so much to you and members. I believe that's all we have. So with that, we are adjourned.